It was a dark and rainy day in February when I was hit by a small red pickup. February 15th, I was told I flew 15 feet before landing smack on my head. Apparently the driver was drunk and didn't see me crossing. I don't remember that day at all. 4 weeks I slept in a coma that many feared I would never come out of. I was placed in a ward with children and teens with major bodily harm and disease. My roommate was a boy named Mason. He never did find out his last name. At the time of which I slept, he found out that some pictures I made from my day on the tour. He was gone. He was there. Another thing. The day I woke up, I was showered with all the attention of my family. It took me almost an hour to realize the presence of the boy in my head at this time. He flashed me the website of Rick. I'm quite a little back to what he was reading. Eventually, I was left in peace. After about 20 minutes of mental debate, I spoke up and asked him to wait. Both was smooth and low, and never failed to make me shudder. I spent the rest of the evening playing 20 questions and began to familiarize with each other. Eventually, my doctor would break our quality time and give me the lowdown on my injuries. Process would be like. He told me that when I was hit, not only did I give myself a nasty concussion, but my legs were also broken in my oh-so-graceful landing. They said I had a 60% chance of ever walking again. We became close instantaneously. The nurses would laugh and say we looked like an old married couple, bundled up in bed watching whatever soap opera happened to be on television. Mason would just flash me his trademark grin when I blushed, and buried my face in his chest. We both had our good days and bad ones, Mason and I. On a particularly tough day of treatment for him, we both lay together with him trembling in my arms. I'll never forget the feeling of his soft hiccups, or the knot at the pit of my stomach. I finally got up my courage and asked him the million-dollar question. He had Hodgkin's disease. I don't think either of us slept that night. Or transitions from cast to braces, Mason's chemotherapy began. However, without fail, when I'd come back frustrated or in tears over a difficult session of therapy, he'd be there to comfort me with soothing words and reruns of I Love Lucy. Over the weeks, the chemo began to take its toll. His brown curls thinned to almost nothing. Dark circles took permanent residence under his eyes, and his skin turned pale as snow. As my legs grew stronger, the day I was released no longer seemed like something to look forward to. The day we decided to shave his hair was the day I broke down. I told him I would do anything. Give blood, bone marrow, anything to make him get better faster. But he just shot me a smile that instantly made me melt and wipe my tears away. 60%. Mason had a 60% chance of beating his demons. Same as me. On May 12th, I was officially released from room 104. I would walk with a limp lightly for the rest of my life. Every other day, I would visit Mason. Each time I would leave, we would take a picture together. Over the months, I could compare our first picture and our most recent one and see how much he was deteriorating. He wasn't going to survive to see Christmas. That was 2 months ago. No longer being able to bear to see him hooked up to all sorts of machines, we decided to steal away in the night together. We bundled him up, and we drove away in my mother's car until we arrived at an old cabin my family would stay in during the holidays. Mason and I couldn't be any happier. I don't care that I'm on the news every night, or that every cop in the county is looking for me. All I care about is being with Mason forever. Even if his flesh is crawling with maggots and beginning to peel off his bones,